Hey, it's Brent Smith, and welcome to BSL Insider Radio. My guest today is Amy Oscar. Amy is the author of Sea of Miracles and the Soul Caller Training, and she actually is a soul caller, which we're going to get into in the conversation here. She's guided hundreds of women and men through the Soul Caller Training. It's a 5-week paradigm shift from stress, fear, and suffering to ease, beauty, and love. You can read their comments on her amyoscar.com website. She's also doing all kinds of interesting things, and I think rather than just go down the list, I think I'm going to let her explain it to us as we roll through this and let it just kind of flow. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
It is such a pleasure and an honor to be here. I'm delighted to talk with you. Thank you for asking me.
Very welcome. We've also got Dylan Prema with us today from the BSL team and Jason Troy. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Great. Everything is going wonderful. Thank you for coming today, Amy. I love your work, and I think it's fantastic, and it's amazing to read through all that you're doing and see how close that we are in alignment and talking about your story and just overall and helping people, you know, transform to create extraordinary lives. So it would be wonderful if you could take us through your background, because it's very interesting to see kind of, you know, where you came from and how you came upon all this and kind of where you're heading now.
What a great question, because where do you start? You know, where does any life story start? One of the things that I work on with people is just trying to find the doorway through which to enter their own story, because people come to me at all ages, 28, 35, 42. I work with people in their 60s. Where do you look for that? Because the thing we're looking for in my work is, what's the gesture that I came in to complete? What's the offering, the gift that I came to bring to the world? And how can I complete that gesture? How can I complete the giving that my heart's longing to offer to the world? You know, and how can I do that in a way that also empowers me, gives me a comfortable life, a life of joy and fullness, and creative self-expression, and money. It's nice to have money too, you know.
Yeah.
So where do you enter? So I'm just going to jump into, in a way, my favorite part of my story, because it's symbolic, and I work a lot with the symbolic nature of the world that we live in, the way that the world seems to mirror back symbolically through so many different forms, like symptoms, or, and I'll talk about all that. You'll ask me lots of questions, I'm sure, but symptoms or synchronicity or things that seem to just happen that have meaning to us. These are symbolic conversational gestures that the world itself makes toward us when we call out to the world. So the part of my story I'd like to enter from is when I was a systems analyst back in the day, before everyone knew what a PC was, because I'm 56 now, and I worked as a systems analyst when I was in my 20s, and my job was to teach the New York City banking district, so that includes Wall Street and the banking district, the whole financial district, how to use these strange boxes that just landed on their desks. And my specific job was telecommunications specialist. And so out of that, I learned how to translate documents, words, messages into light, pulses of light, and beam them through phone lines to other computers where they were picked up and retranslated into messages. And so the reason I like to enter there is that I'm still doing that today, only I'm doing it with people's stories. So I translate the messages because I'm also an intuitive. And so I receive guidance that I share with my clients, and I teach them to also receive guidance themselves through this process of listening to the message, translating it into words, so translating light into message and message back into light and into words. So that's what I do. And that's the fun sort of metaphorical way of talking about what I do. But the sort of the current present time story that I'm working out of is about 8 years ago, I was given an incredible opportunity. I was a magazine editor. I still am. I work for one of the largest women's magazines in the world as a columnist. And I work with Dr. Doreen Virtue on a column about angels. And so when I was given the opportunity to work on that column, it was an assignment, you know, like any other column. I did good parenting tips. I did Christmas columns. I did all kinds of health columns. But this was something different. And at the time, I have to honestly say I didn't believe in angels. But we got started, and people started sending in their incredible stories. And since we began, I've read, it says on my website, I've read 10,000 miracle stories, handwritten often on, you know, on paper with lines, torn out of notebooks from real people who were just like me, who had jobs, you know, just like our listeners probably, who were telling me about incredible events that had happened in their lives that they couldn't really explain any other way than to say this was a miracle, and I believe the angels were involved. And they were sending these stories to Doreen through me. And what an experience. What an experience. So I read at that time 10,000 stories. Now I would have to say it's more like 20,000 because it's been quite some time since I wrote that piece of my bio. So through that process, I was transformed. I like to say the angels stuck me right into mystery school, and the stories themselves began to convince me that something was going on in the world that couldn't just be explained away as coincidence. And then this story started to happen to me. I would leave my desk at home, no one else home, just me and my computer working on a story. And this was back in the first year or two, these kind of things were happening. Different things happen now, but back then I was still in that early stage of what I call attunement, where I was really just touching the hem of this thing, you know, just slight, kind of willing to believe it, but not really yet. Like, I was a show me state, right? So I was very much saying, you know, if you're real, show me. And then they would show me, and I would say, if you're real, show me again. I was really testing at that time. Anyway, I would get up from my desk. This is one of the first things that really blew my socks off. I went up to get a cup of tea in the kitchen. When I came back, there was a great big feather on my keyboard, huge feather.
Really?
And in my house, windows closed, no down garments anywhere. Great big, I still have it, this beautiful feather. I've found several other feathers of that size, which look, I guess it has some stripes on it, maybe a hawk feather. I don't know. And I've found some very large white ones in unusual places also, like on the seat of my car as I get into my locked car in the parking lot. Or, but mostly...
Like a feather, you're a feather magnet.
I'm a feather magnet. Yes. Well, people... I actually am. In my book, one of the first things I write about is this way before I had any inkling any of this was going to happen to me. I met this woman I was in my 20s, and this very unusual woman who just started talking to me one day and essentially inserted herself into my life. And all she wanted to talk about was miracles and angels. And she would just kind of catch me up while I was walking home from, I lived in New York City, I was walking home from the subway, and there she would be with her bright red hair and her this piercing blue eyes, and she'd be like, oh, I happen to be in the same spot you were in every single day for some reason. And
wow.
As we would walk, she didn't always do this, but toward the end of our relationship, after she had taught me quite a bit about angels, sort of like a sideways lesson, like when I wasn't looking, she would give me another bit of information. She started to sort of reach up in my hair and pull feathers out of my hair or pull them off my clothes, you know, in the summer, little feathers. And I'd be like, oh, what am I doing with feathers in my hair? Like totally unconscious, no sense of, like I didn't believe her, didn't have any sense that what she was talking about could possibly be real. I thought she was very strange. But it's possible she was an angel and just sort of sent to plant seeds in my life, in my mind or in my heart, so that when this other thing happened, you know, I'd be ready. I'd be sort of seated and ready for it, because I remembered this right away as I was reading the stories. And I, you know, it was only a matter of a few months, these lessons that I was getting from her, and then she's gone. She just never showed up again. So I don't know.
Hmm. Well, if someone came up and started pulling feathers out of my hair, I know if I'm open to it, then yeah, maybe I'd be okay with it. If not, it sounds, you know, it sounds crazy kind of, right? It sounds like, you know, and I mean, in the moment, how did, I mean, when you tell the story, it seems like you reacted, you know, very smoothly and everything was cool and all that. But was it really that way in the moment when this was happening because you had already been open to it, or?
No. It wasn't. I thought she was strange, and I talk about that in the book.
Did.
I didn't like her that much.
Yeah.
In a way, you might feel like you had a stalker, right? I mean,
exactly. A stalker that follows me and pulls feathers out of my hair. I've never heard that one before, but.
But the other thing that was fascinating was it didn't. I only felt that way later. When I was with her, I felt at peace and just wonderfully, sort of cocooned in some sort of safety, you know, like I won't invent the story. I won't make up stuff. I didn't feel like bliss come over me or anything like that. Like that all happened later and I can talk about that. But at that time I didn't feel threatened or unsafe. But when I was separate and I'd tell someone about it, they'd be like, why is she always there? You know, maybe she's talking.
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah.
But no, not at the time. It felt fine. It felt fine, but I didn't particularly, like, I didn't want to be her friend. Like, we didn't go out for coffee or, you know, none of that. It was clearly some sort of, like, I feel like a drop of information or an implant, you know, or something like that. Yeah. But then so that was early, but, you know, it wouldn't be very much after that that I began working. I took a little class called DMA in New York at my brother-in-law's apartment. And it was this little class about creative visualization and sort of the way that we think about things shapes the way that things happen, that sort of early 1980s visualization work. And I, through that program, I became a teacher and I began to lead teacher trainings. I sort of moved right up through because it really resonated with me. And through that work, I came in contact with all kinds of other teachers. And this was the New York in the 1980s, very new agey, very like, we did a lot of trades. I did past life regressions for free and people came to my class for free. So I got all this sort of fundamental background in woo-woo, I like to say. I talked to trees, I learned about crystals, and I even channeled Archangel Michael one day in a workshop. And then somewhere in there, in the sort of, as I was standing on the stage, my own second sight opened, and I was leading a meditation for about 200 people in a New York City hotel ballroom, and I saw this wave of undulating sort of blue-white light floating over their heads, and I saw sort of in that way that we see in a kind of an instant download, I got that there's this connective tissue through which we connect through our thoughts, which was going to become sort of a cornerstone of my later work. But just like the work with Joanne, sort of I saw it, and then it went and got filed somewhere for later. Because soon after that, I had a moment where it was a moment of, you know, real deep humility. I was about 26, 28, maybe 26 years old, right around that age when, in human biography, there's that Saturn return at 28 to 30 when big events shift, you know. And this right around that time, I was standing on the stage, and I was still seeing all those energy and lots of gifts were being, it felt like being added onto me. And I was feeling really, really special, you know, like really powerful and important. And one day someone raised their hand in the back of the room, and he was probably around the age I am now. And he asked me with real reverence a question that I was absolutely not equipped to answer. He was twice my age. And I felt like I was struck by lightning. I how dare you try to answer this question? Don't you dare. And it was as if time stopped and a white spotlight was on me, like nothing else moved. And I had the sort of the presence of mind and presence to have a conversation with what I would say my soul or God or, you know, whatever presence was there saying to me, you have a choice to make. You can answer his question based on the script that you have, because I knew what to say, right? Because when you lead workshops, there are certain questions that repeat and you're sort of given the answers that the workshop leader wants you to give and the technology that you're working with wants you to respond with. So I was offered that opportunity and I would go on. The choice said in this sort of future vision that I had, you can go on and become a leader in this organization, or you can answer from who you actually are in present time. You can tell the truth and go walk your own path. And maybe you'll have your own work to share one day, but that's your choice, right? You can be true to yourself, or you can be sort of a company man. So like, and even in spiritual work, there is that kind of choice that comes. Right? And so I sort of then time moved, started moving, and I made my choice. I said, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know how to answer you, and maybe my colleague will answer. And he answered, and I stepped off the stage, and I never got on again. I stepped off the stage, and I knew it was time for me to go and sort of go into my wisdom time, my deep training sort of mystery school of having children and, you know, building a family and learning from that experience, from life itself, who I really am and what matters to me. And so that was the foundation of that shift for me. And I only recently woke up by the copy machine at work.
Choice. It's about choice. Choosing a different path, choosing the same path in the moment.
Yes.
What it takes to make choices, and you were the cause at in your life at that moment for what you do now, which is great, and that's an important lesson for everyone listening out there. Just, you know, there are moments in your life.
Yeah.
Well, there are lots of moments, more than you think, and most of them that you're unconscious for. But there are some moments that you're conscious for, and you know that the choice is important. And depending on which choice you make, it's the rest of your life can affect the rest of your life and one way better than the other for sure. So, well, you know, we're glad you chose what you chose.
Thank you. So am I.
And here you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to sort of underline something you just said in your comment, this idea that there are some big choices that we make. For example, what college will I go to? Who will I marry? You know, will I change religions? Lots of these choices are made at that age, 28 to 30. But sometimes people come into my virtual office where I do my one-on-one counseling, or my virtual classroom where I do the training, and they have a sense that they made the wrong choice. And I think that there are probably a lot of listeners who have that thought, well, I made the wrong choice. I went with the company, or I married the wrong guy, or whatever. And I want to say, and I know you'd agree, you can unmake these choices. You can't unmake the consequences up till now, but you can make a new choice from presence at any time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, and if you, you know, if you learn from the choices that you've made, I mean, that's what keeps people indecisive and paralyzed by indecision, is they don't want to own that bad choice again from their past experience of, but not understanding in that moment that life is an education, and that you learn, if you don't make any mistakes, you don't learn as much. So of course you're going to make some bad choices that don't work out, but it's dusting yourself off, learning something from it, and moving to the next level and pushing forward and letting it go and seeing, what did I learn from that? And how is this a springboard to the next level? Or, you know, how is this a thing that propels me forward rather than holds me back, and I'm angry and I'm shameful about that choice, you know, because we can get lost in that. So it's very powerful to, like you said, you can choose to make a new choice now and move forward.
Yeah, and also, you know, you can, even from the perspective of making a bad choice, you can see when you go, when you really allow the sense that in that there's a guiding gesture that's sort of laying the path out with you, not for you, because I don't actually buy the idea that we have this sort of fated track that we're on, that some preordained outcome. But you have this, if you can get your mind around, or your heart really, around the sense that in every moment you're laying out the next brick in the path with the force that walks with you, that's, you know, there to guide and support you as you do this work, that you're moving toward, again, toward that gesture, toward that gift, you know, that you came to deliver to the world. And so mistakes are part of that path too. And when you start to look at them less as, well, I took the wrong turn, you know, there was a fork in the road and I took the wrong turn, as there was a fork in the road and I took the turn toward shadow instead of toward light, but I learned the same lesson. You realize you're on the same path, because you can't get off the path.
Yeah, I think it, in working with the labels of mistake and failure, and then adding the meaning that we've added to them, which is that they are separate from success rather than part of success, we've really done a disservice.
Exactly.
And so people feel like they're separate, which is, and it makes it very easy to go down that road of self-loathing and depression and know what's wrong with me and I'm a loser and my mom was right and we have whatever that your story is. rather than, this is the path. This is the path. Totally. I'm totally on my way to success right now. Sure. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's just an obstacle. I'm going to go around it, jump over it, push through it. Right. That's how we would think of it if we didn't attach the meanings that we've attached to those labels, which are all human inventions. And I think that's another thing that's, we always try to tell people, you know, all this is human construct. It's all invented by humans. Yeah. The words, the meaning, and the emotion attached to those words and meaning, it's all invented. And the only place that it's real is in our collective agreement about the fact that that's real, or we point to it and say, see that? Yeah, that's what that is, right? Other than that, that's the only place it's real, in that agreement right there. Other than that, it's fluid and it's open to interpretation, and you have a choice how to interpret it. But, you know, we've also, you know, kind of caused people to feel like they don't have a choice, or if they do, it's only a few people who have some special, you know, talent or something, rather than, you know, encouraging people to access it or to find out how to access it. Does that make sense?
Been led away from the truth. Yeah, they've simply been just led away from the truth. You know, the truth of, you know, believing in your power to create. You know, and even when you don't have the evidence for it, when the work you're doing, and the energy you're creating is not visible. Because we're so attached to the outcomes, that's all part of that matrix, right? That we're not. That we're sold to believe those lies that we can't, you know, create whatever it is that we want to create, or to listen to our intuition even and follow our guides, as Amy was saying.
I think the thing I work with people more than anything else which is why I call it training, not the soul caller workshop or the soul caller class. It's a training, because what we're doing is retraining the mind to yield to the authority of the heart, you could say. So what we're trying to do is to do what just the something I think we were talking about before the show, the idea that the there are these ideas that we have that we give authority to. Let me enter through a window that you were just talking about. I think it was Jason. Maybe it was Brent. I don't recognize your voices.
It was me, Brent.
Brent. When you talked
about it could have been Dylan.
I think it was Brent. That was the voice right there.
Okay.
You were talking about this idea that we believe something is true because of a collective agreement, that everyone agrees that this is true, therefore it's true. And that's the evidence, to use Dylan's example. That's the evidence that we use while everyone else is doing it, while everyone else says it's true, rather than looking for evidence of what we sense may be a different truth. And I wanted to sort of come back to your idea of this, everyone agrees on something and therefore we all follow like sheep, because the idea that everyone agrees on anything is so outlandish once you get a look from kind of above all the stories. If you could kind of rise, if we could be like God and rise above all the stories, where we could kind of look down from a mountaintop and get a glimpse of all the very different ways that people on the planet interpret what's real. For example, a Buddhist is not going to see things the same way that a Christian does, the same way that a Jewish person or a Muslim or a Hindu. There are so many different ways of seeing, or an atheist for that matter, or a pagan. So there are so many truths that so many people are spending so much time defending, when what's really available to each and every person in every single one of these paths is the real teaching of every one of the prophets that brought that stuff through, is it's all inside. There's a light inside your heart that knows. There's a voice in your own ear that will whisper the truth to you if you listen. And what I teach people, and I was saying earlier why I call it a training, what I teach people is to test the guidance. Don't believe it. Don't push against anything. Don't go to war with the collective agreement. Don't say, well, you know, Madison Avenue tells me that I'm a consumer and that my function on the planet is to buy more stuff, when I feel like a creative whole human being who feels really differently about what my purpose is, right? Instead of going to war against Madison Avenue's idea of what you are, listen for what your heart is telling you your idea might be, and then test it. And if you hear something that feels like guidance, but you're not sure, a lot of people say to me, how do I know it's really guidance? How do I know I'm not making it up? Ask for more guidance. Ask for a sign, right? When I was receiving, one of the reasons I got a great big feather on my keyboard was I would see a license plate that said, you are loved. And I would say, yeah, well, someone has a license plate that says you are loved. Even though I had just asked the question, do you love me, God? I still didn't quite believe it. When I was working with, it was about three, 4 years into the process, I began to sort of feel the presence of this wisdom that was trying to come through. And I started studying the, you know, energy anatomy of the human body and all kinds of, I was just guided from step to step, from teacher to teacher, while all this angelic guidance was also coming in the form of feathers and pennies and messages on license plates. I was driving home from the office one night, and I had just put the angel column to bed. And I was sort of thinking about Well, the chakra stuff, I've always known about this. Even back in the 80s, I was studying all that, but it doesn't feel real to me. Angels, I said out loud. So this is like, look at the crazy conversation here, right? Like,
yeah.
Right? Like, so chakras and energy don't quite feel real. So let me go to the other thing that didn't used to feel quite real, because now it does. That's going to become my authority. So I had worked by then to a place where I trusted guidance that would come from the angels, right? So I said, sort of in my car driving along with, you know, NPR on the radio, mm-hmm. I said, angel, show me a sign that this chakra stuff makes sense, or that I should continue along this path. Some question like that. And right in front of me, a car cut, a white car, by the way, cut right in front of me, and its license plate, Chakra 7. Chakra 7. And I've seen that car around, right? I've seen it since then, but that was the first time that I saw it. And it cut right in front of my car. No, these aren't coincidences.
No, I think there's signs everywhere if we're open to them. You know, and so it depends on what lens we're interpreting them through, or receiving those images or incidents, if you will, or moments.
Yeah.
Where you are, where your belief is at, you know, where you are in your life, where your mindset is, where your energy is, and so on. And I think that, and where you're, and where, what level of awareness you currently have. So I think that's all very important stuff.
It is. And I mean, the other thing is, your listeners are probably less inclined to the kind of language that I'm using, to the more, you know, more mainstream business-like language that you're using. And there's a whole paradigm here that we're both talking out of, where what I want to sort of draw a bridge for the listeners, where, you know, we can talk about God, we can talk about light, we can talk about guidance with any words. You can come to this in any way that's comfortable for you. You don't have to sound as woo-woo as I sound. Right? You can use the bridges. You know, Marianne Williamson, the author of, what's her latest book, Divine Compassion, or she's had like a million books. But Marianne Williamson talks about the idea when you go into a boardroom, you don't, if you're feeling guidance, if you're feeling like the angels are talking to you, you don't walk into the boardroom and say, well, listen, Jesus told me that we should, you know, drop that in favor of this other one, right? You use the language, the vernacular of the environment that you're in, right? So you don't have to give up, because I always tell people, you don't have to give up your faith. You don't have to give up your religion to find your own intuition, right? You don't have to be...
That's a very important point you just brought up, because, you know, one of the things that we do around here is that we're committed to is giving people access to next level information and transformational work in a way that's the easiest to digest for them, for where they currently are, not where we'd like them to be. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that, right? We want them to be on a certain level of self-development, but I always have to keep reminding myself they're not there yet. So make it digestible. You know, make it understandable in the most broad way at first. And, you know, because I think that's the way I had to be led as well. You know, I mean, I understood all these concepts. I'd heard all the different languages about it and the woo-woo kind of stuff about it. And yes, I did shy away from it for a while because it was a little bit different than something. But as I started exploring new ways of thinking about it and new people that were talking about it, and found some people that resonated with where I was currently at, that was the bridge that helped me to move through and open myself to some of those new ideas. And then, of course, being the kind of business marketing person I am, I said, okay, so to make this accessible to, you know, as many people as possible, we definitely have to frame it as, you know, XYZ and make it digestible and so on. So I think that's a good point you brought up, that, you know, just because you know something on a certain level doesn't mean you have to talk about it like that. I guess that's my whole point here, is that you can, you know, be aware of the circumstance or the climate or the wherever you're speaking, and you can adjust it. And actually, that's really powerful. If you can adjust it for many different audiences, that's super powerful, because you'll reach more people and you'll help more people. And that's really what it's all about. And if you're committed to that as an individual, as a soul caller, as a healer, as a helper, as an inspirator, as we say around here, as a giver, then you will be willing to do that. You will be willing to access and deliver in a language that best suits, you know, to the best of your ability, best of your current ability, that best suits and facilitates learning and consciousness, waking up, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, including your own. Including your own. Like,
Amy, before you, I just want to ask you a question before we move forward, and kind of bridge that gap for both of our audiences here. You know, different words mean different things to different people, and I think one thing that will really resonate is so social conditioning teaches people very often to be certainty driven and to overvalue it to an unhealthy degree. And my question to you is, what allows for the transition from that place of attachment to, you know, knowing what's going to happen next, and moving from that place to embracing uncertainty and trusting the unknown? Because a lot of times, one of our biggest challenges with clients is the letting go of attachment. You know, there's always, even after all this work, there's always even maybe just that last strand of attachment that they just can't let it go. So I feel like, what allows that transition to happen, to go from that place of being attached and completely certainty-driven that maybe our conditioning teaches us, to getting to that place of unknown and that mystery school? How can people make that transition?
Well, I guess it would help to say that the social conditioning works by separating us from the truth that we're not separate. Right. So the way social conditioning actually works in us and then works through us so that we do it to other people is to create the illusion, the story, the lie that, it's better over there than it is over here where I am. Right. So the way we're conditioned, and essentially you could look at the great conditioning system that we all turn on every night, right? The television.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
the it tells us that we can be more beautiful, more happy, more rich, more successful. You fill in the blanks. More of everything that we think we should be. I felt fine before I turned the TV on, right? And then I turned it on and they entertain me for 20 minutes and then they spend every interstitial minute telling me how not okay I am the way I am, right? So that's the social conditioning. And they attach being okay to their product. So that's how the sort of social conditioning makes us into consumers, which I referred to earlier, rather than whole human beings with free will, right? And I want to just go one layer deeper, and then I'll answer your question fully. The reason that Madison Avenue and, you know, our entire sort of socioeconomic system right now operates out of that formula of, you know, turning us into essentially batteries that power the economy so that the economy can grow is because it knows the people who are writing the ad copy, the people who are selling the products, know that the most valuable commodity on the planet is your attention. And they know that, but they don't really know why. They think that they want your attention so you'll buy their stuff. What they don't know is that the reason that attention is so powerful is that it's energy. And that what we put our attention on animates. It grows. It lives. If you turn your attention towards someone who has their back to you and you stare at their back, they'll turn around. That's because your energy, your attention is energy, and they can feel it. And that's one of those early lessons that you get, sort of sends a chill up your spine, right? When you realize that that my thoughts have a kind of electricity, a kind of transmittal quality, and they create an effect, right? So using that as a foundation for my response to your question is, how do we transition from attachment?
I love that.
Yeah. I do too. Sometimes things come out of me that sound much more clear than they did when they went in. Which is, by the way, an example of, I'm just speaking what I see. Right?
Right.
I've learned to do that. I've learned to just say what I see as I see it and not edit myself. But that's another conversation. So the way that we transition from this kind of attachment to outcome is we start questioning the outcome that we're after. Do I really need a new car? Do I really need a bigger house? Do I really need new wardrobe every single season? So you, when you start to ask those questions, you get a kind of response from inside the bubble of you, right? Because your organism is, you know, enclosed in its own energy environment, right? And it has a field of resonance all its own. So you'll start to receive responses from inside rather than have the answer to that question imposed by a magazine or a television show that tells you you need to have shoes with red soles so that you look special, right? So, to answer your question, I want to keep coming back. I'm focusing myself back because that can, sometimes you have to pull me in. So
hey,
please feel free to do that.
It's okay. I love the consumerism thing because we talk about that all the time around here.
Yeah.
We work, that's one of our mantras to everyone we talk to. No, understand why you are the way you are and understand what's happening. Don't be angry about it. Just be this new person, but understand why it's happening. So if you're worried, it's the messages you're receiving.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely right. And don't worry about it. Just check in. And so let's play with the shoes, right? Do I need Christian Louboutin shoes? I ask myself, well, not really, because I couldn't stand on those things. They're a little high for me, right? So do I need a brand new car every 2 years? Well, not really. This one I have is running okay, right? So you keep asking, and then you kind of check in because sometimes there's a little pull. Like I just felt a little pull on the car from you guys. So like you start to feel into, well, maybe you want a new car. It's okay to want it. But the question I asked was different. Do I need it? And so you want to keep getting that discernment because it's okay to want what you want and to have what you want. It's just that
how about to want what you don't need?
You can want what you don't need. Exactly. You can want anything. Yeah. You don't it's not about don't want anything. It's not about detach from all material goods. It's about attach your attention only to that which truly serves you in your intention, which, you know, we haven't talked about, but your higher intention to bring through the gift of your life to the world. Because when you're all done, you're going to be looking back over your shoulder and saying, did I complete my gesture? Did I get my song sung, right? Did I get my book written? Did I get my love made, right? Was I of service in the way that I really feel called to be of service?
Yeah, we're always saying, you know, it's okay, it's fine to have stuff. Have it.
Oh, yeah.
Just understand why you want stuff that you don't need. Just understand that. Be aware and then make the choice. Make whatever choice you want to make. But understand that you don't need everything that you want. And there's a reason that advertisers in Madison Avenue have created that want and that false need. Just understand that. That's the truth. Now, you can still have it. You can still go buy the car, buy the business, whatever you want. Just understand when you have them and you may not be as happy as you thought, that's why. Okay, there's nothing wrong with you. you've just been letting all this stuff in your head that's meant to do exactly what it's doing. Because once you are not okay with what you've got, you want something else. which is the next level of consumerism. So you keep buying more stuff. That's what
that's
all according to plan. So just understand that and then buy accordingly. You could still have it. We also say that once you, if you will, and we do talk a little bit about unattaching from certain reasons to have things. We'll say, you know, if you're going to buy a new car in order to get attention, in order to get wrong reason to buy it, and you won't be happy for very long once you have it.
Right.
However, you can still have it, and you might still go buy it. I think that if you wake up and you're aware that your decisions will be a lot better, and they'll bring you more of what you think they're going to bring you, if the reason that you buy in the first place is not towards something that's false, that you've been brainwashed to believe, knowing that it's all about brainwashing.
Yeah, because to be really clear, what the brainwashing has trained you to believe is that the brainwashing is directed, it's aimed right at the emptiness that you feel. So that's the important thing. And
it's very scientific. They're professionals.
Exactly.
They're experts at it.
Right. They go for pain points. It's called pain points marketing. So but the point is that all of us are born with this call, right? This longing, this emptiness, this existential emptiness, this sense of separation. And so
human condition.
It's the human condition. And, you know, part of that is that it draws us, what we say, you know, and all spiritual teachers talk about this, your hunger is the greatest motivator, right? It's a gift that also feels like hunger. So it's an ache, but it also leads you forward toward fulfillment, right? So the way that I like to think about this emptiness is your hunger is a call for fullness. Your thirst is a call for a drink of water. Your existential longing to connect with some higher purpose is a call to connect with some higher purpose. so there's
just,
you know,
connect with it.
Right. So find the path toward that. Find the tribe that resonates with where you want to resonate. Find your people, find your places that are resonant for you, for the hunger, the particular hunger that you're, in a sense, calibrated. I avoided the word programmed. You're calibrated, because that sounds like it's an external force programming you.
Right.
And that's not real. That's not real. That's another illusion. You're calibrated just like a sunflower is calibrated to turn toward the sun. It moves, it physically moves all day long, like a clock toward the sun. So that's not programming, right? But it is in its DNA. It's in its you know, the very physical nature of what it is, right? And like that, you're like that too. You're like a sunflower. There's a light, a particular frequency of energy, whether it's music or poetry or art or being on the radio or being a dancer or like me being a teacher or, you know, like Oprah having a TV show, you know, whatever your call is, Steve Jobs to, you know, transform the world through technology and so on, whatever your particular light is, the frequency of that light, turn toward that. And that's where your joy is. That's where the emptiness will be filled, right? But not with the Ferrari or the shoes with the red soles or the, you know, the next great, I don't know what, they're going to roll down the pike. But use those things as tools to bring you closer to that light. Enjoy them. I was going to say before, if you buy the car and you don't feel as fulfilled by it as you thought you would, find great stuff about it to love. Appreciate it. That will help you, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, feed it the energy of your attention. That's right.
Exactly.
Jason, what do you have to say about all this?
I mean, I think You know, I think I'm realizing in consumerism, the more I think about it, is that unless you come from a point of view of giving and you feel incomplete inside and you know that happiness is inside of you, any ounce of consumerism will lead you down a negative path. Because even the people that, like, let's say someone saves and it appears as though they have financial things under their control, the only reason they usually do is because of fear of losing. Right? They've lost so much. It's not coming from the other place, because if it was, then they may be living that life maybe for a different reason, but most people are not. So I just think one time you go down that path, it's a drug you can't stop, and it just leads to further, you know, putting you in a really bad place in your life. So
you're saying, like, saving money to get safe rather
than
saving
money. Yes, to get safe, exactly.
Money.
So there's a lot of ways you need to rethink this, and the fact if you're not coming and not doing that work and not in the right place because of that, it's the things that you may interpret as positive actually have negative consequences around them of why those people are doing those things. You don't know the backstory on it, but a lot of it's, and I've talked to some people and I've gotten deeper into it, it's been around fear. It's not coming from a place of strength. So I think if we don't answer in our calling and inside and find our purpose to be serving others, I mean, it's just, you're
not
just living life.
Or not. Not always. I mean, I don't want to argue with the host, but...
No. Feel free. Feel free.
But I'm not sure. I mean, it may be true, but I'm not... I don't have all the evidence in yet from my perspective that we're all here to give or to serve. I'm not sure. So I don't want to make anyone feel they don't give. They don't feel like that's like the only way for me to be happy is to, you know, go, and I know this isn't what you meant, but it can be interpreted that way.
Sure.
To go out and join a monastery or, you know.
Oh, no. Yes.
Right. Join AmeriCorps or whatever. But that I think that what you were saying is exactly what I was saying in different words, that we're here to bring this gift.
Yes.
Yeah, and we're here for each other in a sense, right? We're all connected. I think that's the big point here, is that giving allows that to happen harmoniously, you know, that connection between all of us. It's interesting you brought up, just going back to one point you made earlier, how by starting to question things, and question why you want things, and question even your own beliefs and perspectives, that you start to almost... that's how you start to trust more of yourself and what you want and what your calling is. It's almost like a paradox. So I just wanted to touch on that. You know, it's interesting how it's like you question to trust.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, I think most spiritual systems are based on some sort of inquiry first, because we do come in with questions, but we also come in with doubts, and it's human nature to be doubtful, you know, especially if you get a little bit down the road, you know, you've tried some things and some things don't work, right? And so you have some reservations about diving into yet another system of, you know, this is going to save me. Because again, then you're approaching a spiritual system, and often people do at the beginning as a way to get something. I will get enlightenment. By the way, I love your focus on this idea of if you do anything to get something, it's ultimately, you know, doomed. But I love that that's sort of at the center of what you're talking about as well. Because we can approach spirituality from a materialistic, point of view as well.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Yeah. And we can't help it. We're trained to do that. And so we're learning to be free, and that's very frightening when it actually starts to happen. You mean I'm responsible for the first thing that can happen is when you realize that free will is real, is that, oh, I really could have made a different choice in that situation where I felt victimized? Or, oh, you mean I didn't have to marry that person even though we had already paid for the caterer?
Right. That's the scary thing. That's the out. That's the blame. That's the avoid and taking responsibility part. That's mm-hmm. why some people will resist believing that it's true, because then they will know, they will have to take responsibility. And they've never had to, and it doesn't sound very exciting and empowering to them, because they can't see it, of course. If they knew that the taking responsibility would be the thing that would actually allow them to be in control of their life for the first time ever, they would do it. But they want you know, that out. They want to be able to blame and
guarantee,
be separate, and so on. And interesting.
I had a woman. Will you remind me that I want to talk about the personal responsibility and the angels, but I want to just tell this little story first.
Okay.
I had this client who reached out to me for a session, and she said, before I make an appointment, can you please tell me, can you guarantee that after we work together that I will be able to be more intuitive and in touch with my angels and have mastery over my choices? And I said, no, I can't. And she prefaced it by saying, I've worked with many other teachers and I'm always disappointed. So before I lay down my money, basically, can you guarantee? Right?
Wow, are you working with the same people that we are? I think that, you know what, that is an email that if you speak to anyone who coaches or teaches, got those emails. And that one person has moved around from each person, and it's not – right. And so as I know where you're going with this, the problem lies in not the teacher. It's the student. And the student, they're telling you the story right there. Worked with many people, and I'm always disappointed, and they never do this, and I never get it, and I want it, and I never get it, and – right? And there you go. Yeah. There's the story right there.
No, you didn't cut me off. It was great. You amplified the message. I've worked with many teachers, and I'm always disappointed. And what you're pointing out is, you know, as any coach will recognize, the language of a person who is looking to hand their power away again. Like a hot potato. I don't want this. Can you hold it for me? Mm-hmm. And then can I blame you if my life doesn't work out well?
Absolutely.
So it's really, when we talk about personal responsibility in this way, people get very panicky. I don't want to be personally responsible for this marriage. This marriage is not my fault. I didn't realize what he was like when we got into this thing. And now I don't know how to get out. So I'm suffering through it, but it's not my fault. And so you really want to, when you hear the words personal responsibility, one of the things that I want to sort of translate that and make a bridge is, in a way, this is the perfect place to begin working with angels, because that's why we have angels. Because that idea that we're not personally responsible arises out of the idea that we are separate from perfection, that what we have isn't good enough, that it's better over there, that the marriage that we have is wrong, and that we made a mistake, and that we can't get out of it, and now we're going to be punished by staying in it. The principle that you begin to, and this goes back to Dylan's question about how do we transition from attachment to outcome. If only I hadn't married him, I'd have a better life. Outcome. Right? Attachment to the outcome is the better life is the outcome, right? And the attachment that it's better over there than it is here, right? And so when you live in that place of in between where I am and where I should be, it's very lonely there, and it feels desperate, right? And so that's the perfect place to say, angels, show me what to do. Show me how to feel. Show me what to say. Show me what to think. Help me to know, understand, sense, see, and also help me know what to do about this. And, you know, inevitably what begins to happen is you begin to see that you may be in this marriage and it may not be great, but you're free, and you've always been free. You're free in this moment. You were free in the past and you'll be free in the future. And there's always a new choice to make. And one time, one of the choices you have to make is to turn to the other person that you're blaming for all your unhappiness and see the perfection in them. And to see that they're doing the best they can just like you. And that it's, they're not responsible for your enormous unhappiness.
Yeah, yeah. This is a gratefulness part of our transformation equation, where we say be grateful. And when we teach guys how to practice gratefulness, it does all those same things that you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gratitude, gratefulness is a really powerful elixir. I'm grateful for what's here now. You could
exactly.
say
that you have choice.
Yeah.
Right? That you have choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's a very powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
Well, them and find their perfection.
Well,
or not. Or leave. Make the choice to leave and move on.
Well, you can leave without separating them from the perfection. And what I mean by perfection is the wholeness of all that is. Right, because all of this, everything we're talking about, is based on the illusion. The ego, or the mind, creates the illusion that we're separate from where we should be, which is that existential emptiness that we're all born with. The idea that we fell from Eden, the idea that we were in paradise but we made a mistake and we're going to suffer for it until we die, and if we have lived a good life, we're going to go back to heaven, right? And we'll be reunited. We'll have this sort of union of spirit and spirit back to God, right? And if I have so much to say about this that I can't figure out which words to pick. But all of the.
Ask your guide, Amy. Ask your guide.
Yep.
If you could see what I'm looking at, the bottom line, I guess, of all this that I'm looking at and trying to bring into words in my telecommunications connection is overwhelmed at this moment. The bottom line is that we were never separate from the divine. We were never separate. It's not better there than here. Here's where we can't get there. There is always in the future. There is always ahead of us. There is always outside of us. All we will ever have is here. Right? Even if we got over there, even if we worked really hard, saved up, got the thing, the car, the house, whatever it is that we thought was going to bring us happiness, and that becomes our present moment, there's always there. There's always another there, like you were saying before, Brent. There's always going to be a bigger car, a better house, another thing that we want. And that's okay. That's okay. But the work is that, and everyone's from Eckhart Tolle to, you know, to Course in Miracles to every single book on the shelf of every spiritual library is talking about the important thing is to bring your attention into present time, because your attention is where the power is. And if you bring it to gratitude, to gratefulness, that, and you look at something with the eyes of gratitude, with the eyes of love, it amplifies and becomes bigger for you. So if you look at that person that a moment ago you were in an argument with, and you look at them through the eyes of love, the love amplifies in them, and you can see it, and you can have access to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think one of the things that our listeners will really hit home for them is when you say seeing the divine and everything, it's just, it's basically when we say, tell the guys and the ladies and gentlemen to create for it and to be in creation, they're basically appreciating whatever's at hand. And
yes.
Instead of consuming, they're producing, they're creating, they're making things happen, they're
mm-hmm.
Going out, connecting with people. You know, but they're really, when you're going out inspiring people, you're really, what you're doing is you're seeing the divine in them as well. You're seeing the divine in the moment. you're having fun, you're appreciating what life has to offer by being inspiring and being the escape and allowing others to have a good time around you as well.
You're in the flow.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And I think I think that's a big point for the guys to look at it at BSL over here is we never talk about it like this ever. And I think it's a really important perspective that whether you're calling it seeing the divine in everything or mm-hmm. creating for it, it's the same thing. And it's carried out in all these different ways.
When you talk about being the creator, being the creative person, bringing through all the energy into creative activity, being of service, all of that can translate also into being a space for light or love in the world, right? Or light and love, which is the same thing. It's just energy, right? Which is the impulse of the embodied light. We're talking about bringing the divine to earth through the physical activity of your life, through the intention of your focused attention. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We call that being the escape, where we offer allowing people to transcend their conditioning by, you know, in a sense, being the light, right?
You are the light. Yeah. When you get in that flow state and you forget what you're doing because you're loving it so much because it just the work is just flowing through you, that's you blended with the perfection of all that is. That's you blended with the divine impulse that's working through all of us all the time. And I want to just, because that can sound even still again a little religious or a little woo-woo, I want to bring some science here. I want to say every cell in your body is programmed to come to a state of balance, stasis, homeostasis. You all learned that term in
Absolutely.
Science class,
yes.
Right? We're all, the physical world is programmed to stay in balance. When things go out of balance, we see responses from the earth itself to bring them back into balance, right? When something gets, an oil spill happens, the earth works to clean it up. When there's a fire, the earth works to clean it up and bring new growth. There's always the world itself, the physical world, including your body, because you're part of the physical world, is moving always toward balance, toward stasis. So is your energetic system, right? So when you talk about this idea of coming into flow and letting this impulse of life itself flow through you, that's what's happening. You're coming to a place of such alignment, such balance of between the mind's intention, the heart's intention, and the soul's intention come into alignment so clearly that you experience this lined up feeling that we call flow. And the energy can flow right through the organism of you into the world, through your hands, through your song, through your creative impulse, right? Through your dance, whatever your move to do, whatever I said earlier, whatever frequency of creativity you flow to, you're responding to an impulse that comes from the divine all that isness, which is the same energy that powers the sun, the same energy that makes a flower grow, that makes that little bud reach up toward the sun to get the light. You're turning toward the light as well. And when you do, you feel that flow. It's science.
Great. Well, we covered a lot. Did you guys have anything else, Brent?
I think all that was awesome. It's all in alignment. It was great to hear, Amy, another perspective, another way to facilitate, explain, you know, some of the our common principles and so on. And I think definitely some people out there had some tremendous insights. And as usual, if you have those tremendous insights out there, everyone, take action on them immediately. Make a choice to take action immediately, or it may never happen. Amy, we want to thank you so much for being here today. It was enlightening and awesome. And I was going to say I got a lot out of it, but I'm not getting anymore. I have a lot out of it. I'm about having right now. Amy, where do you want people to go to find out more about you and what you're currently up to and find out about your books and classes and retreats and so on?
Oh, it's all on my website at amyoscar.com. You'll find it all there. And right now, actually, we're running for the next 2 days. When will this air?
We're not sure yet. So
probably a couple weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so that special will be over. But
that's
I will
okay. You know what? Check Amy's website for. You never know; there might be a special offers.
There actually usually is actually, but I will offer your listeners a special that is running now, a separate one, which is if you'd like to read my book, you can download a free e-copy of my book by using go to the regular order process, and when you get to the ordering page, use a special code ALICE, A-L-I-C-E, and you can download a free copy of my book. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I thought I'd give a gift. It's always good to give, right?
Yes,
it is. Thank you so much. Everyone will love that, I'm sure. So go over to amyoscar.com and download the free book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I throw in one more thought, too?
Sure, sure.
Because I feel like I didn't quite answer Dylan's question earlier, and I do have a very clear answer to this question of how do we transition from attachment to outcome into sort of living this life of fullness. And it's really straightforward. You do the work. You inquire within to connect with an outcome that really matters to you. So you check in, you get in touch with who you really are. Earlier I talked about separating from the questions that arrive out of the buy now culture. And you come up with the question that has been calling you forward all of your life, and it's there. It's underneath all the other grabbing and grasping that you can't help doing because you've been conditioned to do it. There's this other little voice that knows who you really are, and that will help you if you get its attention and let it get yours. So that's my more clear response.
Right?
Yep. And you what? And you.
And you're truly unfiltered then at that point, right?
Yeah, or you're at least at the point where you can. You can catch yourself filtering things, yeah. Through you, where the lens changes from what can I get to what is it that my soul is calling me toward giving. So it comes right back to that essential lesson that you're teaching here in all your work, right? You get the funny, you know, it's that paradox of the spiritual path, which is when you stop trying to get something and you come toward the world in a spirit of generosity and appreciation, you get everything.
Nice. Yeah. Everything. That's awesome. And that's a perfect way as a final thought for our audience. So thank you for that. Thank you for adding that.
You're
sure that adds a lot of value for people out there. Okay, great. Well, if you, everyone out there, thanks for listening. If you know someone who could benefit by listening to this audio, we encourage you to share it with them. And, of course, go to amyoscar.com if you want to know more about Amy. And thanks, Dylan, for being here. And, Jason, thank you for being here. And if you want to know more about what I'm up to or the BSL team, you can go to BrentSmithLifestyle.com. Okay, we will talk to you all later.